Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Teocasin Ghost Horse, a member of the Cheyenne River Lakota Nation of South Dakota. He has a long history with Indigenous activism and advocacy. He's the founder, host, and executive producer of First Voices Radio, which has been on the air for 27 years and is syndicated internationally in 82 public, commercial, and community radio stations. Teocasin is also a master musician of the Lakota flute and performs around the world. In 2016, he received a nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize from the International Institute of Peace Studies and Global Philosophy.
Hey, thanks, Derek. And it's very interesting because this is perfect for me this time, because right now I'm looking outside. I'm seeing a cottonwood tree, the talking tree, and that tree is saying, and it's bright sunshine here where I live in the Northeast in the Catskill Mountains, and that tree is saying it's Sundance time. Season's here soon. So this is the other way that, you know, source, the Mother Earth has her own way of broadcasting her message, just like we are doing it through the radio. Yeah, thanks for welcoming me.
So this is going to sound like a strange question, but I think you'll be able to take it wherever it needs to go. What is the relationship between the sort of standard English language sentence structure of subject, verb, object, and the destruction of the planet?
Wow, that is not so strange. I think I'm familiar with it. I think I would say it's growing up in another language, not being conditioned by it, because people say in this society that it's your language that conditions you. But I think that comes from a rational, more or less illogical logic of saying, well, there's only one way to think and this is how we must get along. So when I'm talking about is the Lakota language, it starts with, where did we receive it from? And where did we learn? Who taught us this language? And we always refer to the earth, and the earth, you know, which is very science fiction filling for a lot of people. We're saying, well, that's not possible, but it is possible. Even in today's English that I'm speaking now, there's a lot of words that coming, or at least the innuendos are coming from the ideas of Earth. So when we're speaking Lakota, you're talking about not using the words for I or me or my or mine or ours. There's no possessive in it at its base, and this is the older language. Now, the newer language of Lakota has a lot of noun-filled, subjective and objectifying of everything. So it basically takes the life and spirit and energy out of it, and it becomes something that is unconscious and it can be dominated. So that's the key word in the Lakota language. There's no word or concept for domination. And so when you speak of that, you look at the earth where you acquired the language or were taught the language, and you can't even begin to dominate the earth. You can't even think in domination factors. You can't think in judgments. You can't think in possessiveness. Now you take a young Lakota boy out of that and you take him into Catholicism and or Episcopalian or whatever, these churches, religions, and government, and even the sciences are saying, well, this is the only way to think, and we're going to betterment of man or humans or however they're using the words, is that we have to get away from the consciousness of Earth in order to do this. And that means those peoples who are and remain primitive in their thoughts, such as a native language, by the way, which was banned way back in the 1880s for us as Lakota, 1870s, and then given to us as a freedom of religion, so-called, and it's based on the authority of a religion that one God. And now, 1978, we're free to speak the way we want to. But by that time, 100 years later, several generations later, we're being taught this other language of church and God and state. And so we are getting away from who we are. And so when we go back to the etymology of Lakota, where we are, you know, coming from the truer roots of who we are as indigenous peoples. And I'm not saying all indigenous peoples. I'm only talking about the Lakota that are really understanding not the division of two worlds clashing, but the fact that you can be one Lakota living in one world and your Lakota is one of relationship and inclusion. So anything that I learn in English, anything I learn of the Western world, I'm including it into the Lakota vernacular, because that's how our system, that's how our relationship to other peoples, other ideas, other words and knowledge and is absorbed within, so that we can see what is good for us and not what is good for us, and that we will use what is practical to keeping our conscious alive with the earth. And so when I switch to completely a mental state of communicating, I have to think in subjects, I have to think in judgment, I have to think in objectifying everything and classifying and linear and hierarchical, a beginning and an end, and of course take the spirit out of something so it just becomes a chair, and that's for use for a chair, because we made it as a human, so it's a chair. We can sit in the chair and we can chair the room. We can be the chairmen or chairwomen and take the authoritative stance on everything, and therefore we can access knowledge because we are an authority. Now, the other way around that we know as Lakota is like everything is in front of you. Everything is in front of you and in front of you. And so your viewpoint is that you have the least intelligence of all these conscious beings that are there, and that they are your teachers. And so we become behind everything. And so we become the most ignorant of all these beings, because we are the last to be here. Now, when I'm going to the other side, I feel like, well, I have certain knowledge, and I've done this, and I've did this, and you know, it's all about I. But when I go home and I start talking about I, me, my, mine, or ours, the old people, they start laughing, because that's just not done in the Lakota way. We don't talk about I. We talk about the others, you know, and how we can relate to each other. And we bring the news, we bring, you know, the food, so to speak, of the spirit, so that we can be speaking to each other in relationship, rather than I am the news bringer and I am this way. And it's always beginning with the I statements. And that is very comical in the Lakota way. And this is the experience that I have between the differences of being able to speak English and conceptualize just about everything, so that it becomes a subject. What are we talking about? And then if we don't, we make it into object. We can categorize it. We catalog it. We label it. We nounify it to death. And therefore, it becomes a thing and without consciousness. And we go on with that. And we've been doing that as far as I know for a long time. I've been thinking this way about, geez, it hurts at the end of the day, the mental capacity, which is not big enough for the spirit, you know. So we make it the mental capacity to understand spirit into a religious dogma. That's something abstract and away from us. And how do we get abstract? Is that we become extractive in our methods. And I like the word that you use, epistemology. You know, this is what is going on, a completely different program that is not conducive with the earth. So yeah, that's a good question. Thank you for that.
So thank you for saying all that. And I want to go in a moment to either where you talked about, I don't remember your exact language, but you talked about words coming from the earth. I want to go there in a second. Or we can also go to us being the youngest and learning, you know, as opposed to humans being the smartest creatures on the planet, the recognition that trees have their own intelligence. We can go there too. But there's kind of I'm sorry if this question is too ignorant, but you know, I only speak English, and this is very, some of this can be very challenging to try to understand. And so you're talking about a chair, and you were saying that in English we talk about a chair and objectify it. And I I'm sorry if this question is too ignorant, but so in the old Lakota, what would one say about the piece of furniture that one sits on? Did you, how, I understand that, there are different ways you can talk about. Okay, a very simple thing is I used to get in fights with my former publisher because I would say the tree who, and he would, or the fish who, or the bear who, and he would always try to make it so it's the tree that. And so I understand that there's a difference between who and that, but that's on a pretty simple level. But okay, I'm just going to stop now. Is this making any sense, my question?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's very, 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 I don't want to say simple, but it would take us stepping outside the mental box of the programming that we've been, more or less, my way was, the Lakota way was taken away and forced that we should speak English. So we begin to see everything as objects so that we can control, we can move the furniture about and you know, control everything. And so when I refer to the chair, in the Lakota thought it would be the chair is chairing, not just a chair, not just an object. In fact, when you say chairing, then you see it in motion and in energy, and it's, even though it's stationary when we see it with our eyes, deep down within the wood, where did the wood come from? Where did the fabric come from? Who made the chair? All of those ideas are included in chairing, because all those motions of peoples who made the chair, who grew the tree grew and became that chair, is chairing. So that it's still living to us, and so the respect would go out to the chair, but all from those root elements that I described to you. So if it's a simple thing of adding the ing. But that would seem silly when I speak in English. Chairing, you know, it's the same, goes out to where we don't really have a word for heart. And that understandably in the English language, heart is basically core. And so, but the heart is seen as, well, it pumps blood. It's a mechanical device type of mentality. And, you know, it does this function. But with the Lakota, it's opposite. Now, this is coming from an interpretation from my mother, who speaks the old Lakota language, is that the chante, or the heart in English. Cha means tree-ing, and the te is a derivative of, living. So when you refer to your heart, you're having a living tree-ing. So it's always, you know, connected with the consciousness of the earth. And so you speak from the heart, and that's where the language begins, is because that's the first thing that we know. Even now, science begins to function as an organ within the human body. But also, just lately, as you know, Derek, that science has proven what maybe the chante that we use it as, that the tree has actually a heartbeat. And so when we go to that consciousness of being able to understand the alive language and unsubjecting, unobjectifying, you know, things as it is, the chair is no longer a chair, it's chairing. And then you could, you know, interdimensionally, if I can go there, this is the language of English, but interdimensionally, you begin to see the dimensions because your thought patterns become different, not just, you know, the noun that is a chair.
You know, I thank you for all this, because I've read over the years, you know, so many books about how profoundly our birth language, or our language from early childhood, I should say, influences how we perceive the world. And you are right now sort of blowing my mind with how... Okay, I'm going to use this word, but I don't mean it. It's like we're almost different species. And again, I don't mean that in terms of, you know, a black bear is different than a coho salmon. But those worldviews implied in those languages are so profoundly different. And I'm thinking that, you know, sort of the English and materialist language and mindset is really powerful for some things, like converting all of the forests into the world into chairs, or sort of the modern medicine approach to the heart as a machine allows them to do things like do open heart surgery, where they have you, where they're actually pumping your heart through a machine for 5 hours. And on the other hand, there are tremendous expenses from that perspective, because once you see the heart as a machine, and once you see the chair not as the process, that leads to the perception of the world as resources, including our bodies as resources. I'm just rambling. Take this wherever you'd like.
No, I think that's true. The profoundness that you're talking about was what we would say in English would be mystic or mysticism, but that's just too easy. And what if we didn't have the word, and I'm going to go there really quick here, Derek, is that what if we didn't have the word for God, that we couldn't even define what God was, because in the old languages, it evolved so much that you understood that the center of the universe was everywhere, such as Black Elk said of the Lakota people. And to say that God is abstractly out there in heaven is that we're already thinking, you know, of leaving without even knowing that we're leaving. And to say that God is that God is to say that who are we to say that? Are we that arrogant to say that God? Who are we to say that when we don't even live that way? And far as I can tell, my experience is living in the Western way has been very different than understanding it when I was young, because it was all an appreciation. So now I'm going to go back to the different species type of thing almost. Because it's because of the different processes of knowing the land, and you could say, well, all children know this, which is true. All children are born in a sort of a metaphoric understanding of all that is, the sort of magic that is there, that it's all ahead of us. And we have so much work, we have so much to learn, because everything is seen more or less in optimism. And you're at it the rest of your life like a child, not just to own the knowledge, but to understand the wisdom that's within the knowledge of the earth. And when we don't live that, we are just kind of making it up. You know, we're just kind of trying to experience it. We make parks to go experience the park. We make a beach, you know, to go experience that, because it's all in fun, because we're looking for the enjoyment. It's the opposite. Now I'm going to go here too. Hope you're following me. Is that when we experience pain, right? Our bodies, our minds automatically become concerned. And on the other hand, when we're experiencing the fun and happiness and trying to always maintain this fun, this temporary fun all the time, is because we're trying to avoid the pain. Now that may not fit in this English way we think in English, but it's the same feeling, but we define it differently. In other words, we're looking for a denial of our pain. So that pain comes out in different ways to say that things are different, therefore we must hold them and nounify them. That knife over there can cause pain, but yet we're not seeing how sacred a knife can be, because it actually can help with the pain. It actually can help with you know, different things that a knife is used for. So that knife becomes, again, it becomes a magic, it becomes knifing. So it's helping us, and it's just how we apply our intention to it, because that's what we're doing, and we don't understand our own intention. That's why the language is so we need so many words in English to describe something. But in Lakota, there's so little words in the original language that it didn't need. Now think about it. It did not need an alphabet. It didn't need a beginning of time and an ending of time. It didn't need dogma. It doesn't need nouns. And you have everything in verbs. Then everything is alive. Like when you were a child, everything was alive and like just incredible. quantum world out there, and you understood it automatically without having to write it in a chalk on a chalkboard or in a book. You just understood it. So that's the original language we all come from. And that is not, you know, to me, there's no division of the species as humans. It's just that some of us remembered and some of us are forgetting. Some of us have totally forgotten. And so now it's that sort of consciousness that we call Waka in Lakota. That means basically to consciously apply mystery to everything. And that's what we do with the chair or the tree or the heart or that bird. They're all doing, we add the ing to everything. And that's how a child would relearn in all of us, even the adults. If we make it so simple and stop making it so complex and articulate the simplicity, even adults can understand that. I mean, a child can, you can walk into a classroom and a child would understand Mother Earth more so than they would say, if you say, what do you prefer, planet Earth? Or do you prefer Mother Earth? The child always goes, most of the times, goes for the Mother Earth because they're closer to their own mother in that way, the physicalness of it. So their patterns are, you know, are we taking them away from the closeness of mother, intimacy of Earth? And then we're teaching them another language called planet Earth, you know, which is really seems very sterile to call a Mother Earth a planet. Yet science is saying, well, we have to do this to dissect it so we know where we come from. And so in all this searching that we're doing, where we come from is in this way, that child, we're coming from it. And we're not searching for anything because it's all in front of us. So we don't have to go to it. It's a different feeling when you come from it rather than having to go research it or look towards something, a goal, a solution. So you're always kind of moving away from where you come from, so to speak. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but that's basically my delivery for right now.
So can you say again, I believe the word was Wakan?
Wakan, yeah.
Wakan. What is that again?
It's basically the word Waka is wise, like purity, right? Ka is like energy. All right. Now they're moving. Now you put them together. The purity of energy is everywhere in the universe. Energy is everywhere. And so that doesn't have a god. That doesn't have a female. That doesn't have a male. That's energy as its pure state. So when we are consciously aware, we can apply that, consciously apply the mystery to everything, you see. And so that's when your language comes in a form that is from as very elemental, not fundamental, but very elemental in understanding the consciousnesses of other species, such as birds and animals and tree, water, that those things are also consciously your language. So your language becomes more alive, more aware, because those species of elements, conscious, intelligent elements, are also speaking to you because you're speaking the same language there. And I think if there was a difference, that would be the difference between my conceptualizing what I just said about life in its simplicity, as I would say, because that's the Wakan that we miss in science and in religion and in government. Yeah.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, I'm looking at some trees out the window, and I can, if I just talk about a tree, I can say, you know, I can describe it as a redwood, etc. But applying what you just said, that implies on a really foundational level that even in the language I use to talk of the tree, I am acknowledging that there is a tremendous mystery that I will never completely understand this tree. Am I getting it at all?
You are getting it. But go the other way around. The tree is understanding us. The tree automatically knows what we need. So it gives us that consciousness. It gives us the oxygen. It actually gives us a lot of knowledge. Because tree, I think the etymology, you can tell me this because English is my second language. Tree is the etymology of tree is truth. And that comes from, you know, a lot of places around the world that have tree at the center of their religion or spirituality, that the tree is actually above and below. So what we're saying is that what we've been taken away from is the consciousness of a tree, the roots of the tree roots consciousness. And we've been put into the grassroots mentality that, you know, we always have to make something new and temporary because this grassroots is about political statements and who's right and who's wrong and who's better and who's worse. And so it's always just going back to the drawing board and this newness about life when it's always new anyway. So why do we have to describe it as new when it's always new anyway at the same time as it is old? So a tree which has the consciousness as a seed goes into the ground, a human maybe put any plant with a seed, put it in the ground. Humans, in their natural and a nurturing sense, sing the song. They taste it with their tongue, and they put their DNA on that seed, and they sing the song that's been sung for tens of thousands of years the same way. And given that human, you know, push, you would say, and puts in the ground, that little seed becomes a geologist, it becomes a nutritionist, becomes a hydrologist, it becomes all of these sciences together. Then at the proper time, it has a cue to like, okay, now I can germinate. And it comes above the ground and it sees all this world like, wow. And then it keeps growing and, you know, humans and horses and, you know, animals step on this little plant, you know, some rabbit come and nibble on it or something, and it keeps growing and it'll keep growing and has this consciousness all the time, the weather patterns, the seasons, and, you know, and then as it gets older, it becomes a very supportive, sort of this trophic cascading of supporting life from the top on down. Yet the life had come from underneath up. And so when it matches the root system underneath, you have two spheres of consciousness. What is above is also below. And this is the same method of describing the heart, where our head, our brain is basically a seed of the heart. So the heart is basically our feeder of intelligence, spiritual intelligence, if you will. But it feeds that consciousness. That's the same way the tree feeds. But the one thing that is different is that the human, those with technical ability, are using, they're not understanding the earth as much as a tree would. So the human builds all of these technical devices, contraptions, and whatever, develop and progress. And they leave and they shoot big star satellites out there and telescopes to try to understand the universe. Where do we come from? Who are we? And it's all in search of who we are. And yet the quantum physics of this tree actually has been consciously awake every second of its life and understanding and seeing the stars every day, and can probably tell you more about the cosmology than the human who is using technical disability, I would say, to try to understand where do we come from. You know, and we always are bedazzled by our own, being in love with our own intellectualism. But it's like, wow, we never seen that universe before. And yet you can go to traditional native people and they can name galaxies and stars because they've seen them in their stories, in their so-called, their creation stories and origin, that they have them within their stories. And this is that Earth again. Had the consciousness to teach us the earth, teach us the language, teach us the intelligence that they already know about the universe. So if that's too far-fetching and it becomes a science fiction Harry Potter film, and like that means that it's only make-believe, and so we're not going to believe the people who are actually living this consciousness, the Wakan, where we are always conscious, so much so that I can say that eventually you will remove the conscience of judgment, of weighing, of measuring, of costing, of cost-effective thought processes, and that technical less contact with Earth will move away from the conscience back into the consciousness. Because it, as you know, Derek, the tree does not have a conscience. It's conscious of everything all the time. And that's if we move into that state of being to be conscious of everything, you know, it just doesn't have to do with our mind. It has to do with the rest of the what we would say is the Wichozani, the balance of the mind, body, and spirit. And then we remove the division between the body, mind, and spirit, and all of a sudden everything is one without any division. You see, so and you apply that same process of consciousness with the tree, as with any life form out there, and then we start understanding and communicating in that language of the earth, so to speak.
This all reminds me both everything you said about, you know, having a God that's way out there and all these satellites. It reminded me of this exchange I saw between a news person and an astronomer one time. The news person said, so why do we need to go explore Mars? And the astronomer said, so we can answer that most important question of all, which is, are we all alone? I started laughing out loud. It's like, you idiot, you're asking if when we're surrounded by life everywhere. So just take that wherever you'd like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there, just even, you know, there's as you know, creation stories of that have been turned into myths. From native peoples about where we come from, you know, how we have instructions about having you to return there. And that doesn't require the use of language. And if I could go there, that we can't even give away secrets in English from the Lakota language. You see, because the concepts and all of those, this is why I can speak English, that we can swallow English up and the thought pattern and the concepts, because they're very minuscule in its evolving of a quantum physics. They disappear as being one of the particles in the language of Lakota. So it's not to say that we are better or worse. It's just say that we understand it differently. Therefore, we can actually think in concepts and yet not lose we don't educate the wisdom out of ourselves that's been given to all of us, basically. And if we understand that truly, then we'll understand why we always being conscious of what we have to say versus what we want to say. And so when I'm here talking to Derek on the web here, so basically I'm thinking about the astronomy. I'm thinking about why there is life other places is simply because our way of looking at the universe, looking at the Wokan, is this perspective we have that everything is in the future. If you see it that way, then you lose the present. Everything is in the past. And if you see it that way, you lose the present. So it's definitely that we have to be on right here, the presence, and this is the way of the language, is that everything has to be conscious and focused in of now. So you never lose track of who we are, and definitely know that other planets, other life forms are always have been there, because we don't have a word for human being in our Lakota language. We have a word that is we can describe close to that is Wichasha. Or Ikche Wichasha. We say Wichasha because Wicha is basically star and Sha is a gift. So if you could apply that to the scientific theory, we can say that we are beings of the stars, or star nation, or star beings. And that's because of our stories. We knew that, but because we didn't have a scientific language to divide into a side, it's in our language. It's in the quantum physics to describe where life, where we came from, or where we're at now, or, you know, that even the planet, it needs the other planets to be in balance in order to support life here. So we can't exclude other life forms. It has nothing to do with colonization. I mean, that's another form of domination. But what we're saying is that everything has to relate in order to continue the balance. Even though we see it out of balance in the English language, it is really medicine. I mean, right now, all these terrible things, so-called, are going on with the earth and the people and the climate change. But, you know, underneath it all is this great peace that Mother Earth has it under control. And just not the fact that she doesn't want human beings around. She wants the ones that are still honoring her. And that would be true for any mother or any father, or any family, that we continue this, but not so much in a sense that we can say, well, they're looking for other life forms. It's sort of this cosmological way of looking at. We've humanized the universe, therefore we can describe the universe, and yet we're still sending satellites out there to find out how we can describe it, because we forgot that. Now, these quaint myths, mythical stories of native peoples have within their languages all the sciences of where, you know, describe it. If you can take these words apart and put it back in English, which really you can't really translate that, and we can say that with all languages, but indigenous languages. We're talking about when Einstein came in 1930 to the Hopi and basically described that 12-year-old children of the Hopi were the most prepared to understand the theory of relativity, then he also wanted to know, wow, that's E equals MC squared. Why are they living it? They are living it. They're not reading it out of a book or being educated. They are living this. So that's what I'm saying. If we live this understanding of life with even a different, rather than having to rely on education, because someone is controlling that. Someone is educating the wisdom out of ourselves, out of you. Like we say, education, the etymology of education is to educe or seduce. And in quotes, it means to draw out or lead away from, and dot, 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 an ellipsis. And I really wonder what that dot, dot, dot was. And if you could fill it in, it would be to draw out or lead away from spirit and replace with information and knowledge. But who is information and knowledge controlled by? But the authority, because it takes 12 years in the Western educational system to teach children from the first grade to 12th grade to learn how to become reflexive to authority. And that's why authority works so well. And why so many native people get in trouble with authority, because we're trying to relate and there's no room for relationships. That's why there's reservations in the United States on our own land. And that's why we're over there, and that there's no room for Lakota in America, in our own land. But yet in our hearts in Lakota, there's room for America. That's why everybody is here. So this is what I don't understand, that, you know, even though we are stuck in on reservations, we don't even have the right to own. We only have the right to occupy. And that's why they're reservations, because any governor, any president can arbitrarily just sign it off, and therefore no reservations exist. So, you know, in this way, this is the same way. We're putting things out there to control. We want to control. We want to control space. And if there's consciousness out there, is because we miss it here. And that's why we can't really say, well, there's not life out there. Otherwise, they would have contacted us already. But in that way of Wichasha that the Lakota have, is that we don't have a word. Actually, we are those life forms that we are saying is not out there. But yes, all universe is interactive with each other. And if you have that language coming from it, and this seems like it's you know, we can't put a thought on it. We can't put our thumb on it. We can't nail it down. So it's impossible because the language evolves as we can. As we are on this continuum. Now this begins to sound all new agey, but that's the nature of the English language because that's the only way I know how to simplify it.
So I think I'm thinking about how Vine Valoria and so many other indigenous people have said to me that the first and most important distinction between Western and indigenous ways of being is even the most open-minded Westerners generally perceive listening to the natural world as a metaphor, as opposed to the way the world really is. That, or another way to put this, Vine Valoria said that Westerners generally perceive the world as consisting of resources to be exploited, as opposed to other beings to enter into relationship with. And I'm just thinking about how, if you can open up your mind to that, to the world consisting of other beings whose lives are as important to them as yours is to you and mine is to me. And this includes the grass, this includes the trees, this includes the gnats, that they're all complex beings, that suddenly the world itself becomes infinitely more complex and morally complex.
That's so true because it is there. You feel it. You see it every day with your eyes. You feel it with your intuitive thoughts, your intuitive feelings. And you go out there is that if you go out into the world, into the natural world, so to speak, and you close your eyes, like, you know, the blindness that we see when they actually are open, we just go past a whole movement. We just go past something and we're not wanting to relate. We want to get through it. Because that savage nature is out there, and that savage, those savage peoples who live in the jungle, we have to tame them. We have to make them, we have to give them computers and books and, you know, like, you know, why are they this way? But when they could be this way, we can improve their lives. They don't have to have all the diseases. And yet that, to me, says there's a certain amount of ignorance out there, especially in the West, saying that we need, as Native people, we need this, we need that. Even our own people have forgotten that and saying, well, yeah, we need computers and we need all of this in order to communicate. It's true to the sense. But what if you were to go shut off the light switch? What happens to all the communication? Would we know how to communicate? And that communication, if we lose it with the earth, then the neglect language, the language of neglection, neglecting the earth, and therefore if we neglect something, we're automatically, something is missing. So we begin to speak a language of lack, and that becomes subjective because we'd be taking the spirit out of everything, and we're lacking and wanting and greeting and everything to get the right answer or the you know, to fill up. And yet is that old thing that I remember about the hungry ghost, the Wendigo, the Washichu, the thing that wants so much that they can't have enough, that they're information fed, that they want more information, yet that information is always changing, and we can't get enough information. It's information glut, you know, gluttons of information that we think we're going to change, and yet there's no rootedness in that information. Now, the slower people in the Western Hemisphere or the Western thought process are those indigenous peoples because they're actually communicating with nurture, with the nature out there. They're actually in it, in relationship with it. They want to know that complexity first because that's where our life comes from. Now, wouldn't anybody want to be with the life forms rather than the one that's described in some book? You know, that would be my question.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and I'm going to do something terribly unfair, which is I'm going to ask you a question that would take a lifetime to answer.
Okay.
And that is, again, so many indigenous people have said to me that one of the first and most important things that we have to do is to decolonize our hearts and minds. We hear that language all the time, decolonize.
Mm.
Can you, again, in 5 minutes... talk about decolonization and its importance for indigenous people and And if you want its importance for non-Indigenous people as well. But really, well, I have two questions. So we're adding in even more to do in 5 minutes. Decolonization, and also, what do... I know I'm going to ask you to speak for an entire people, and that's not fair, but what do the Lakota need?
Well, speaking as my understanding, because my experience is a little different than most Lakota people, is that these words of colonization and decolonization are just a program that they were given to those of us with the education that we had to fight with that all the time, because that's contradictory to us. Is colonize, does that exist in Lakota? No. Does decolonization exist? No, it doesn't. So why are we messing with it? Why are we giving up our energy, our spirit to what they force upon us? It's the same recolonization. You could go with the missionization or the settler colonialism, the repudiation, the domination, the discovery, the conquest, reconciliation. We can go on and work all of those consequential languages formulas that are given to us. So those are merely formulas. And if we don't deal with them, in a sense, we recognize them even better, because they are somebody else's thought process that was forced upon us as original thinkers. If we speak our language, then we see it more clearly. So, you know, once we remove that programming, then we see what it is for what it is. It just drains your energy to think in those mental concepts. It's like, you know, taking justice out of the earth and making her a mental concept when she really is the justice with the earth. And are we thinking with the earth, and are we living with the earth, because we're balancing the earth, because we're knowing the fire, the water, and the earth, and the trees and animals and things that grow from it. That's justice. That's underground, and that's where it is. And now we've taken justice out and made her a mental concept. And so everybody's seeking justice, looking for justice, earth rights, all these things, and we're still using the same formula fed language that was forced upon us, because we don't know any other program. And that's, to me, the other natives are this way too. They've been taken away from who they are and made into a citizen, an educated citizen of the United States, Native American, rather than the native. Because those are those words don't even go together with me. Because, you know, America, ame means the love of, and rica is the riches, feminine form. So when you become an American, you're the one who loves riches, and that's what this whole country is about. And so when you come to Indian country, which is the whole land, by the way, of North America, then why aren't we feeling who we are rather than what we could be or should be or to be somebody? That even that verb doesn't exist in Lakota. To be what? To become what? To be what? When is that kind of extractive ourselves? We're told, and that's the same vein of colonization and decolonization. That's somebody else's thought process.
Thank you for that. We have like 1 minute left. Is there
I would think, Derek, that, you know, when we are always in this salvation point mentality of saving the earth for what, for who, salvation mentality comes from, again, the domination. Salvation, somebody out there else is going to come and save you if we just do it the old programming way. And therefore, we put words up to stall our time here on earth. And so we get into that old formula fed of salvation point mentality, and we feel weaker every time we do that. We don't understand that the earth is actually doing what we're wanting, you know, somebody else to save us. Well, the earth is doing that already. We just allow her. We stop destroying her with the salvation point mentality that we can save the earth. That's what I'd like to say.
Well, thank you so much for that, and thank you for all of your work. Thank you very much for listening. My guest today has been Teokasin Ghost Horse. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.